Hi everyone, and thank you very much for joining us on another episode of Lit, a Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Mira, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. With me today, I have a very special guest. He is the author of Rise, Start Living the Life You Were Meant to Lead, Royston Guest. How are you today?
Fantastic, and it's great to be here with you.
It's absolutely my pleasure to have you on the podcast, and of course, for our listeners, Royston has spent the last two decades coaching and mentoring business owners, leaders, and entrepreneurs to grow their business and unlock their potential. He himself is also an entrepreneur and author, and we're very happy to have him on the podcast today to discuss Rise. But before we get into the book and the themes and ideas in there, I really want to ask you, what actually inspired you to become an author and start writing?
I've had this fascination with years about what makes people tick, why do they do what they do, and how do you really make sure that you are living a life where you truly unlock your full potential. And, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of the work that I've been doing is coaching with clients. We do a lot across social media channels. But for me, becoming an author was about how do I get my messages, the ideas that I've distilled from two decades of working with people, into a format where I can get it in the hands of more people, where I can make more of a difference and add more value, you know, right across the world, and translate it into many different languages. So the author status for me was just about getting the boomerang, throwing it as far out there as I could and adding phenomenal value to more people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what really stuck out for me from the book as I was preparing for our conversation today was, the reasons for why it was written, and a lot of the questions that the book asks its readers, you know, being stuck in a rut, or whether it is searching for a meaningful purpose, you know, a focus in our lives, and all of these kind of related issues. And I suppose my first question for you, Royston, would be, you know, why are we at a state where we are asking all of these things? You know, what is it about modern life that really has made us question, I suppose, the essence of who we are?
It's a great question. And I think there's a couple of drivers for it. Number one, when you think about the amount of change that we're going through, and that's whether you look at, in the UK, Brexit, whether you look at, you know, America with Donald Trump being elected, I think there's fundamental structural change that's happening in the world. And, you know, I think back to when I was a child, and I'm a parent now with a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. And I think about how I need to create the environment to bring my children up is very different to the environment in which I was brought up in. So I think there's so much change, and I think people are searching more than ever for what part do they play in the world, what's their identity, what's their purpose, what drives them, and most importantly, what's their why. So I think with all that change that's going on, I think it's really sparking people to go inwardly and really ask some of those, you know, big life questions about, you know, am I on the right pathway, or am I, you know, am I veering off track, and do I need to get myself realigned?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose one of the center messages of the book for me was the idea of ourselves, you know, our individual responsibility and us as individuals, and perhaps also being our biggest obstacle and our biggest limiter in a way. And the greatest opportunity lies within ourselves. Why do you think that we've forgotten that we are in control of our lives? And I suppose to follow up, you know, how do we start taking control back?
I think part of the challenge is that with ownership comes responsibility. And the challenge is when you blame the government, when you blame the economy, when you blame the weather, when you blame other people, it allows you to absolve responsibility. Whereas for me, what life is about locking in your core, recognizing that you are absolutely in control of your own destiny as the architect of your destiny. And life is about taking 100% ownership for your life, your actions, and your results. And, you know, in life, there's one of two games you can play. You can either play the victim or you can play the victor. And the challenge is when people play the victim, they can abstain responsibility, and then, you know, it's finger pointing at everybody else. Where the challenge with taking ownership is, you know, you've got to be prepared to look in your mirror. You've got to take ownership for your life, your actions and results. With that comes all the trappings of success, but with it comes, you know, 100% accountability and responsibility.
Yeah, and the fascinating part of the book for me was that, you know, every single chapter in there does focus on a specific part of ourselves or a specific part of our lives. But the one I think that really resonated with me was setting our standards for excellence. And I often think that in the way with fast-paced modern life, we compromise a lot on our standards, you know, just to whether it is keep up with the status quo or whether it is to please other people, you know, it always seems to be ever present. So how do we set standards for our own personal excellence? And more importantly, how do we keep them and not let them slip?
So there's a really interesting expression I talk about, which is this, that the opposite of courage is not cowardice, it's conformity. And unfortunately, in life, too many people conform to mediocrity. And mediocrity is all around us. You know, society is based on mediocrity. So part of the challenge is that to really raise your bar, to really set your personal standards of excellence, is almost like going against the flow of the stream. And it requires energy, it requires focus, it requires conviction, it requires determination, and it requires you to, you know, break out of the tribe of life, put your head above the parapet, and be prepared to do something different. And yes, all the trappings of success come with it, but it's kind of diametrically opposed to the direction, you know, of the society that we are building. And, you know, for me, your personal standards of excellence is, you know, we all have choices. And the great thing about life is in life you make your choices and then your choices make you. And I think for me that the one guiding principle of RISE is about turning off your autopilot. It's about living with deliberate conscious intent and recognizing and starting to think more consciously about the choices. And I think you're absolutely right. And it's really interesting your distinction that you drew out that chapter from, you know, the 14 chapters that are in the book. Because for me, it is also one of my favorite chapters because I think your whole success in life starts with where you set your own standards. And it's an internal game, not an external game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let's talk a bit about on the effect of the so-called external game, as you mentioned there. And I suppose also the idea that success can be down to luck, or it could be an accident, or it could be down to factors outside of our control. And we could just be leaves, you know, blowing in the wind of life, and we don't really get to have any say in it. Now, the book does a great representation of why that is not true, but can you perhaps guide us to why success is not an accident? You know, things just don't happen. There's got to be a reason.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer that there's an element of synchronicity in life. I passionately believe that. However, success is not an accident. And you're absolutely right. One of the key chapters unpacks from 2 decades of literally working with tens of thousands of people from all walks of life. You know, I've worked in South Africa with people who are in the slums, some of the most, you know, unfortunate people to, you know, elite performers to people who were, you know, born with a silver spoon in the mouth. And, you know, the reality for me is that when you peel back the layers of high achievers, whatever their background, their gender, their race, is that success is not an accident. And there are 5 key components that underpin that broad statement. And the first is that it's about defining success and what success means to you. And my challenge in life is, you know, we get so busy on the dance floor of life that we don't make enough time to get to the balcony, which is about gaining perspective, about sitting back and actually being reflective and recognizing you're in the driver's seat of your life and you've got to shape your own destiny. And for me, one of the first things, the first component of why success is not an accident is about living and carving out what success means to you from both a personal and a professional perspective. And, you know, it's one of the most cathartic exercises, experiences that you can do to actually sit down and commit those definitions to black and white. Don't just leave them floating around in your head. When you commit them to black and white, either in writing or on your gadget, whichever your preferred method is, that is almost like sending a hotwired brain message to your brain that says, "This is real, go make it happen." And the clarity you get by actually putting the words down on the paper or on your gadget really starts to create meaning and context to who you are as a person, what's important, what drives you, what are the motivational triggers. So that's the first element of why success is not an accident.
Absolutely. And to follow up on that, I want to talk a bit about the professional capacity and how RISE really does elevate that, because I think it's a fair assumption to say that one of the most hotly discussed topics nowadays is the idea of a brand. And everyone on the professional space talks about their favorite brands, the upcoming brands, the way brands interact with each other, with their customers and so forth. But the one brand that we don't really talk about is our own brand, our personal brand, whether it is professional or in our own personal life. How do we begin to shape our own brand, and how do we develop it?
We live in the age of the brand, and as you quite rightly point out, you know, we talk about brand in the context of, from a professional context, all the time. You know, organizations spend a fortune on creating their brand identity, thinking about how they position it in the marketplace, doing customer research and insight projects in terms of how that brand is being perceived in the marketplace. And yet, when you think about it, our personal brands are no different. And, you know, with all the advancement in technology, I think, you know, we are more connected than we've ever been in the world today. But my question for people is always, but are we really connecting? Mm-hmm. And there's a difference. And how we really connect as individuals is through the relationships. You know, technology is a great platform, but it's the human interaction. And no technology will ever replace for me the importance of human interaction. You know, we are person to person, not B2B. It's P2P, not B2B. So I think this whole concept of really thinking about, not professionally, where's your business brand, or where's Unilever, or where's Apple in the marketplace, but when you translate and actually think about yourself as a brand, and you start to think about the identity and how you want to portray and come across and be perceived by others, then it's a really soul searching journey. And again, raises your conscious awareness that actually you own your own brand, and how people perceive you is a direct correlation to the words that you use, how you hold yourself, your interactions that you have with others. And you can't leave that to chance. You know, today it's about being really conscious about your personal brand, how you want to be perceived by others, and what are the brand traits that you want others to associate when they hear your name.
Yes.
So, you know, in RISE, I talk about, you know, the six steps in how to personalize, design, build, and create your personal brand. You know, and again, it's really interesting you're pulling out some of the great chapters in the book, because I think this is one that really, you know, sparks people's imagination and really gets them thinking about, you know, how they position and perceive themselves in the market.
Yeah, absolutely agreed on that point. And to pick up on something you said there, you know, this idea of technology and all of the different ways that we can communicate now. I mean, I think it's absolutely amazing that as we are doing our podcast now, and we're recording this using, you know, the internet, using an online communication tool. And that's fascinating, and it gives us a lot of opportunity. But you said at the same time that, you know, technology cannot replace the human aspect of communication, but I, at least personally, I've often found that more and more people are falling into that pit of thinking that it does, which can really spiral out of control, create negativity, and just be a real downer in people's lives. How do we stop this? You know, how do we stop technology from, you know, taking over our lives and just use it as an assistant instead?
Yeah, and I mean, the question I always ask is technology an enabler for you? Are you a slave to technology, or is technology a slave for you? And I think it's a really interesting distinction that you make here. And all these things are great in moderation, but moderation is the key word, and it's about how you find balance with them. And yeah, I always remember a story of a client of mine, and we were having the whole conversation about this technology piece that we're talking about now. And she always relays the story about how she, one Saturday morning, she was at home and she was up early with one of her children, was still in bed, but a little boy who was 4 years old at the time was in the lounge with her. And it's 7 o'clock in the morning, and he walked over to her at 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and he said, "Mummy, when are you going to put your phone down and spend some quality time with me?" And that's the moment when she recognized that she had choices to make, and she instantly put her phone down. But that really sparked something in her mind to recognize that one of the greatest gifts that we can give people is our gift of presence. And when you're in the room with somebody, my challenge for everybody is make sure that you are in the room, and not just physically, but you're there mentally as well, that you are tuned in, that you are present, and you're really bathing in that moment. So my biggest answer when we talk about technology is, and you know, I love the fact now that when you look at your social media channels, your phone will give you an alarm bell that tells you on a daily and weekly basis about how much time you're spending on technology and on your phone. And I think for people, it's about taking ownership, back to that key word, that you moderate your use of technology. That, you know, at weekends, my phone goes in the drawer. I don't carry it around with me because that's family time. We don't allow phones at the dinner table. You know, we have conversation over dinner about what the school day was like, about what we're doing. So I think it's just about putting in place some good old-fashioned rules about how you make technology work for you, but you don't let it become all-consuming and overtake your life.
Yeah, I absolutely agreed. And I think there's almost a biological aspect of that as well. And as you say, you know, if you are in a conversation, but you're not really present there, that can not only be, I suppose, insulting, but also strange to us on a biological aspect. You know, we use eye contact, we use, you know, our facial expressions as a way to truly communicate alongside our body language. And I feel that if even a tiny part of that is gone, you know, that's where you get miscommunication. That's how you get relationships, you know, falling through in a both professional capacity and personal one. And I think there's a real danger to that, that we, you know, we don't really hear about. And that's quite concerning, if anything.
It's massively concerning. And, you know, I would go as far as say people are losing their interpersonal skills, or certainly not developing them. And yet my challenge for our listeners today is that actually technology will never replace your ability to enter a room, make people laugh, make people cry, you know, be able to move people, like, you know, with our listeners today. You know, are people going to go away from this interview that we're having and go away thinking, I'm really inspired, there's a couple of golden nuggets that came out there, messages, are they going to be inspired to go and get a copy of Rise? But, you know, our ability in the conversation we're having now is our ability to stir people's emotions, connect with them at a deep and meaningful level. And I think, you know, for our listener, one of the greatest things you can take away from this interview today is never stop developing your interpersonal skills. Keep honing, polishing those skills, because they will serve you well in creating a compelling future, both from a personal perspective in your relationships, but also from a professional perspective as well.
Yeah, and what an awesome message that is. And to go forward, I want to sort of, I suppose, touch on a bit more of the professional side of all this, because you have a very extensive history and experience when it comes to entrepreneurship and, you know, building a business. And I know for a fact that a large number of our audience are entrepreneurs. You know, there are, you know, up-and-coming managers and leaders. Can you perhaps give them one or two tips on how they can begin applying Rise as they walk into the office and, you know, work with their team on their own businesses?
Yeah, I think the number one for me is when you think about, I don't believe that leadership is about title. I think leadership is about a way of being and how you set yourself up for success. You know, it's not about the title. It's not about the size of your office. We're all leaders in all facets and walks of life. And when I think about leadership development, you know, the first start of the journey is about I lead myself. And where Rise really plays in is about doing the inner work in terms of setting yourself up for success. It's about understanding your emotional, your EQ. It's about really starting to understand what your strengths are and playing to your strengths. It's about all the things that we talk about recognizing your personal brand. And the great expression, I think, is, which is so apt for Rise and the whole concept of lead self, is that when you fly on the plane and they're doing the safety demonstration before you take off, the message they give when the oxygen mask drops down is fit your own mask before you help anybody else. And I passionately believe, and you can probably sense my energy and passion and conviction because I've just seen this stuff work so many times, that to be a great leader of others, to be a great influencer of others, starts with an inner journey of doing the self-work that's required. And what Rise allows you to do is to almost do a self-audit of your life across the 14 chapters, written in a very conversational, practical, pragmatic style, where with all the exercises that you get, that you'll almost be able to do a complete audit of self to set yourself up for success in being the best version of you that you can be. And in doing that inner work, then you will naturally be, your core will be locked in, and then you'll be set up for success to be able to go and influence, engage, and lead others. And they will want to follow you, not because they have to,